Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Rich Hudson.
Hello.
Now, lads, we're going to be getting a new bunch of consoles next year, including the PS5, which Sony haven't shown us yet, but we know that it's coming. We know all sorts of different things, so we just thought we'd leap into the game side of stuff and talk about a bunch of franchises that either need a sequel or just need to return. Maybe they've been dormant for a while or whatever. And I thought we'd just open on one of Ewan's ideas, which is what they could do for another L.A. Noire.
Yeah, this is, again, not one of my ideas. I saw this on Twitter, and for the life of me, I can't remember who actually said it, but Mindhunter Season 2 came out the other month. It's a great show on Netflix, all about the burgeoning development of criminology in the early 70s when serial killers were kind of really getting diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And someone had the amazing idea that if Rockstar are keen on using the L.A. Noire license, which they, you know, seem to be, we have the VR case files and stuff, why don't they just make it so that L.A. Noire is... a series that they use the tech for to make different detective-themed games in different eras. Mm-hmm. So you could have a Mindhunter-style serial killer type thing going on in the early 70s. You could have maybe a Vice-style, Miami Vice-style thing going on in the 80s. You could have a Bad Boy-style thing going on in the 90s and so on and so forth. I think that would be a really clever way of, you know, expanding on that franchise. Mm-hmm. I would definitely be happy to have just another L.A. Noire set in the late 40s, early 50s. Mm-hmm. But I think if you were to really, really tap into the potential of that tech or what Team Bondi started, and Rockstar could totally do that themselves with their own studio, I think it would make sense to go in and do different eras with different kinds of crime as the focus.
My thing with L.A. Noire is that I always loved the technology, like all the facial capture stuff was always outstanding, and like obviously came from Team Bondi, but Rockstar, they haven't really used that tech since then.
No.
Like obviously the Rage Engine's great and everything, but they haven't really done much with that technology. And even though like they just released the VR case files, which is the motion controls and the PSVR types thing, where they just strip the story out and just give you, I think it's like 6 or 7 case files. I still love that. I love detective thriller type stuff. For me, my only problems with L.A. Noire was some of the other sort of mechanics stuff, some of the story-based stuff.
Yeah.
But in terms of like a setup, if you just divorce it from trying to do like an overarching narrative and just drop you into a time period.
Even then, they could totally do it. Like they could go back in time if they wanted and do like an Agatha Christie style 1930s, maybe even a Prohibition era L.A. Noire game or something. Something along those lines I think would really, really work. Maybe just do The Untouchables and have someone do Sean Connery doing his really bad Irish accent again. You bring your knife, you bring a gun.
I'd be a big fan. Rich, did you play L.A. Noire?
I've not played L.A. Noire ever.
I'm kind of keen to pick it up
and jump in.
Mm-hmm. You should.
But no, I've not played L.A. Noire.
If you play the VR one, you can accuse people with your actual hands.
You can also grab the corpse and just go, like that. So for people who are just listening, I just did my arm in the air and it was meant to be someone's face.
I totally recommend the L.A. Noire skit. I forget the name of the channel, but there's a YouTube channel of the guy just dancing in the mirror and just being an absolute banter.
I think I have seen that.
Maybe don't lead with that, but it's a good time. Rich, you had down the return of Valve.
Yes, we are waiting on Valve's triumphant return to not being terrible. Since I think their last game they released would have been Dota 2, which was like 2015. Like that. It's been a while.
And apart from the VR minigame things.
They've done a lot of VR stuff. I mean, they're really, really investing in it because, you know, at the end of the day, if any company can make VR a proper, like, I don't say AAA, but like making a full experience out of it, it's Valve. Mm. They've always been very good and being very ahead with these things. The last thing they released, actually, I lied, the last thing they released was Artifact. I completely brushed over
God.
It because it was a colossal failure.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't that close down?
Yeah, the numbers plummeted, irrelevant to the fact they had the guy who founded, like, established Magic the Gathering in to do Artifact. Mm-hmm. It just kind of fell on its butt. Like, apparently, mechanically, it's brilliant, but the monetization of it isn't, like, super greedy. But like it just kind of kills
enough. No one wants a card,
yeah, because it's not free to play. It's like 15, 16 quid to get in, and then it's card packs from on there. But Valve recently released the Valve Index, which is their it is the flagship VR headset you can get. It's a grand for just the headset itself.
Good lord,
it is super duper expensive, but it is apparently completely mind blowing.
Okay.
And there have been rumors going around for a long time. Thank you, Tyler McVicker from Valve News Network, for all of this. That Half-Life VR is going to be their big flagship game.
Ooh.
They're working on, they've said, we're working on a proper full-on game for VR, not like an experience like they've done so far. They've had a lot of experience, like a lot of practice doing that. They're now going to bring it into the forefront and do a full game. And supposedly that's going to be a Half-Life game. Not necessarily Half-Life 3, which, to be honest, I wouldn't want it to be, but it will be something Half-Life related.
Do you think that the return of Valve would be, like, what do you want to see in terms of, like, do you think they're just the VR studio now? That's so, the Vive is so much of their
thing. I don't think they're a VR studio solely. I think they've put a lot of time and resources into it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the Vive was a co-project between Valve and HTC. The Vive is the sort of the go-to premium that isn't the Valve Index now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still going to deal with the stuff as well, because even their other games are still getting some support. Like Dota, obviously the international, that's still a massive thing. CSGO is still a massive thing. TF2 is kind of getting by, just about.
Taken away.
Yeah, but I think they've got, you know, they're sitting on a lot of IPs they can really, really use. If they turn around and said, hey, here's the Orange Box 2 as our big, like, we're back again. Here's Half-Life VR. Here's Portal 3. Here's Left 4 Dead 3.
Oh, Portal 3.
The thing is, like, I out of all of these, even though I love all those games and I love Portal 2 especially, the one that I really think is a no-brainer for them, because surely it would cost nothing to make and it would be easy to develop, is Left 4 Dead 3.
And admittedly, the scumminess of it, they can easily monetize Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
They can easily monetize it.
I mean, it's just like we've got Resident Evil doing a Left 4 Dead type thing. And people are constantly craving those, like, co-op survival horror experiences. And, like, Left 4 Dead 2 was so replayable. Like, even the first one as well. Like, they were both so replayable. And to me, it's kind of mad considering how basic those games were that they haven't just taken that and, you know, just done a bajillion Left 4 Dead.
That's the thing, because, like, Left 4 Dead 2 is only a year after Left 4 Dead 1. And everyone was like, this is going to be terrible, but it's a format you can't really mess up. So I think people would like Left 4 Dead 3 as their next proper game, which, you know, I'd be completely down for. As I've said, I absolutely adore Vermintide, which is just sort of the spiritual successor to Left 4 Dead in the Warhammer universe, but give me another Left 4 Dead for definite.
Because it's weird, and Turtle Rock are doing Bound for Blood or Born for Blood, Blood.
It's a Back for Blood.
Back for Blood. And, like, that's clearly them tapping back into the fact that, yeah, until sort of Resident Evil came out with the Outbreak stuff, or with Project Resistance, it was like, yeah, there is kind of like a niche for like a zombie style horde shooter that you have a million.
Just a horror co-op thing against the AI. And then,
like you said, it lends itself so well to games as a service.
Totally.
Like, they can totally expand that wherever they want to.
The thing is, like, my first experience of using, like, loot boxes came from Valve. And I think the reason why I'm not so hard on microtransactions is because my experience with it, with playing things like Team Fortress 2, which I pumped a lot of money into.
Rich.
It's a good game, mate.
Stop spending more.
But the thing is that I don't, Valve's approach to loot boxes and stuff in any of their games, you know, Artifact's kind of different because it's a card game. It's kind of expected in that respect. Their microtransaction systems are nowhere near as predatory as anything else. If they stick the same kind of system into Left 4 Dead 3, it's the kind of microtransactions, loot boxes, whatever, that I can easily brush off.
Yeah, yeah,
because
I know what you mean.
It's not actually that big of a deal. Team Fortress had it. CSGO had it. No, there's never been any, like, internal first-party controversy with CSGO. It's only really been when there were YouTubers doing the gambling sites and stuff like that.
Yeah, true.
That's where the problems were. The actual systems itself were fine. So yeah, they could easily monetize Left 4 Dead 3. They can make it games as a service. If they just keep giving us loads of maps and stuff to do, give us all the workshop stuff, let us mod it so it's Teletubbies instead. It's a no-brainer.
I feel like Valve have been missing for so long, even on the Portal 3 front as well. Like, just thinking of the
Portal
technology.
Portal 2 is 2011.
Yeah, thinking of the technology that got announced for the PS5, like the adaptive triggers, like a controller that sort of, like, pushes back against you, that you feel different textures in. I feel like a company like Valve would do something really unique with that.
Yeah.
And just give me like another celebrity style character. Like give me not another Wheatley exactly, but you know, another sort of really good personality mm-hmm. that you can hook things sort of a lot of different set pieces around or whatever. That's one of the things that I love the most about Portal 2. One of the franchises I've got down is Burnout, which has just been dormant for so long. The arcade races just kind of went away. Like the massive push into simulation stuff, Forza Horizon, Gran Turismo, Project Cars. And we did get Dangerous Driving from some ex-Burnout 3 devs.
Apparently that's terrible, isn't it?
Oh no, I like it. I like Dangerous Driving.
Was it Dangerous Driving that was bad? I know there was a Burnout successor that was apparently absolute garbage.
Dangerous Driving, like they released it, they patched so much into it.
Right,
like, it was released very like early on to sort of go like, okay, this is what we're doing and whatever. I was like, the Dangerous Driving is like, you can tell that it's made by the ex-Burnout people. Yeah. It looks exactly like it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really have necessarily the same weight that Burnout used to have in terms of the takedowns and slamming yourself into corners and stuff. Like, yeah. They've still got a ways to go with it, but it was good as a proof of concept. But in terms of just arcade races, like, I feel like they're just dormant. They've just been away for so long.
I think they've kind of merged into the realistic racing mm-hmm. sort of thing. Because, you know, you've got Forza, you've got Gran Turismo, but then you've got Forza Horizon, which is about as close
Horizon's
as you get
close,
to an arcade
yeah.
racer. Now, Horizon is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But it's still that, it's that sense of realism, but with the sense of fun.
Yeah.
The last like arcade race that I played that was recent was Codemasters Onrush.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a game you can play 5 minutes of it, and you played the whole game.
Kind of felt like it.
It was a shame because Codemasters do some really good games.
They do. I was going to bring up Grid actually because mm-hmm. I've been playing that this week, the new reboot of Grid, and
yeah.
it's kind of like you said, it's the weird middle ground between simulation and arcade, and there's lots of different problems with that game that mm-hmm. I think, you know, kind of means that we either have to lean into one or two categories at the moment. I think Horizon exemplifies the best things about going for both worlds. Mm-hmm. I think you're totally right. We need another stupid arcade racer where you can just smash into things
yeah.
and like just free roam and do stupid stuff with your friends.
Mm-hmm. Inhales, Split Second 2.
I was going to say, because Split Second was a brilliant addendum.
It's never coming back.
Probably
it's
not. Dead. But like that was a great way to sort of take Burnout and just add like Hollywood style spectacle and stunt work to it. And like in Split Second, it is Burnout, but you're just triggering all these different environmental attacks for your other players and stuff. And I like that setup.
Wasn't there a really, I don't know, Split Second was great, but that made me remember the really, really bad stuntman games that came out.
The checkpoints are what killed them, because you had to do so much in one go without messing anything up.
I remember when I was at my prime with Split Second back in 2010, I think it came out in 2010 or 2009, all my friends were playing Blur.
Yeah, Blur was great. Blur was great. Blur was like kart racing, but if you had real cars.
It looked like, because my friends were all playing that and they were like, oh, you get items. I'm like, I don't want items. I can blow up skyscrapers.
I love Blur. And there was the one called Rumble Racing on the PS2 that let you like sort of flip and rotate through midair and stuff and land into nitrous boosts. But yeah, there's not enough arcade races where you have a dedicated boost button. You can take people down. There's like the Dangerous Driving is the closest thing to it that's been recent. Although, like I said, it doesn't have the overall polish because the budget isn't high enough for a burnout.
You know what we need?
We're shallow. Mm-hmm.
We just need a new wacky races game.
Oh god, the old school cel shaded one.
Yeah, I had that for the Dreamcast. It was great, mate.
It was. The PS2 one was fantastic as well. So yeah, my shout out would be Burnout, just general sort of arcade races returning. Ewan, would you like Battlefield?
Yes.
Or Star Wars?
I think I'll go for Bad Company first, because I think the thing is with Battlefield is that even though every single game that DICE have done with the Battlefield license over the past decade has been, I think, objectively good. I think the actual the quality has never been in doubt, but tonally, I feel as though there's something lacking ever since they made the switch back from Bad Company to base Battlefield. Mm-hmm. And I think Bad Company 1, but especially Bad Company 2, I think many people consider it to be the peak of the franchise over the last kind of two decades. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because my experience of Bad Company 2 was like, it was DICE was still learning their destructible, like the whole Frostbite thing, like learning how to make the best out of destructible environments and such. But I don't know what it is about it. They made the switch from Bad Company 2 to Battlefield 3. And during that switch, I feel as though they strove for an element of realism that then was kind of absent from how the game played itself. Because if you look at how both Bad Company 2 and Battlefield play, they're not too dissimilar, but there are certain it's not a tonal disparity either, because obviously the single player is tonally different compared to the single player, but there are certain mechanics in there that they try to make it so it's slightly more realistic, and I feel like that doesn't really gel with the craziness of Battlefield. Even though it's very team oriented and you meant to take it seriously, there is an inherent wackiness and kind of cinema style leaning to those Bad Company games that's kind of been absent from the latter ones.
I remember when Battlefield used to be a bit more like experimental. Like, I remember Battlefield 2 was the one where you could like jump out of your soldier and fly across the map and go into
Mortal Kombat. Yeah,
I like that. Like, yeah. I mean, I thought they could have done more with that.
Well,
stuff.
The thing is, with Battlefield 5 and Battlefield 1, I thought Battlefield 1 was great. I really, really liked Battlefield 1. I thought they had some really great ideas with the idea of operations. I thought that was a fantastic way of
like
narrativizing your multiplayer in a historical context like World War 1 is a fantastic idea because it lends more weight to the overall actions that you're engaging
with. Pushing for the next objective and whatever.
But there was a weird thing that came about from Battlefield 1 to Battlefield 5 where the emotion of warfare kind of took hold of the entire game experience itself. The actual single player war stories, they shoot for a reverence for those past conflicts, but there is a weird kind of not kind of sentimentality, but it's a weird attitude.
It feels
very, very forced. I think DICE would do much better to kind of maybe go back to Bad Company and lean into the Dirty Dozen aspects of it all.
Right.
Whether that be in another, like a Bad Company 3, or you set it and continue the story of Sergeant Sweetwater and whoever else was in them.
Yeah.
Or you go back and maybe say, let's do something in Vietnam, let's do something in Korea, let's do something in World War II again, but make it more tonally like it's a film rather than just we're trying to make something that's kind of like Call of Duty but on a grander scale.
Yeah,
I think the climate is perfect for Bad Company 3 because Battlefield 5 kind of slipped out of the gate. It's not really taken off. Like half the time I forget the game even exists. And you know, Call of Duty is in that position where they've just rebooted Modern Warfare. People are genuinely excited. I am really excited for Modern Warfare.
I've been playing Call of Duty Mobile. I'm like hankering to play more COD.
And you know, if this works, which you know, there's 75% of me knows this is going to work. I think there's only a slim chance that this will completely fall on its ass.
Right.
But I think maybe this is when EA would look at that and see. Look, because like Bad Company 2 is at the same time as like Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was 2010. Yeah.
Slap bang in the middle of Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2 then. So that kind of era is coming back. So if EA look back at the Battlefield library and think, right, what was there? It's Bad Company. Let's do Bad Company 3. It honestly makes the most sense to do that if Battlefield is kind of slipping at the moment. If they did 6, then people will go, okay.
I feel like they don't necessarily know what their biggest hook is.
The interesting
anymore.
Thing is, I think they probably benefit from maybe doing another 1943 style arcade game. Do you remember 1943?
Yeah, man, that was one of the first Battlefields.
That was the first Battlefield.
No, 1942 was one of the first. But 1943 was the arcade game that they released, where it was like a few select maps. It was like Iwo Jima and a few different maps. It was like set in the Pacific Theater of World War II, and it was just an arcade game where you had a few base classes, a few base guns.
So snappy,
but it was so mechanically tight, and I feel as though if they were going to do a demo for what we could see in a next gen Bad Company, maybe just do like a Battlefield 1944, but have it as like a cheap arcade game that you can just hop in with two of your friends.
Maybe it could be like an arcade mode within Bad Company 3.
Exactly.
Like you have like a bare bones mode in COD that gets rid of all the classes.
I'd definitely check out. I'd look at videos of 1943, Rich, because it was a barrel laugh.
The death of the Xbox Live Arcade was like one of the weirdest things that just shouldn't have gone away. It was a great way to guarantee you were going to get a demo for everything. Microsoft used to mandate, so you could play everything that was going to be on there. And then you did get these weird little half-step things that weren't indie games, but they weren't AAA games, but they were still filled with AAA-style mechanics. Like, that was awesome.
That's interesting. Like looking at new storefronts and wondering, okay, which one of these is a mobile game ported to a console? I'd like to have that discerning, like, boot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like looking for the Switch sale at the minute, and it's like, everything looks crap.
Yeah, it's like 95% of the stuff.
Yeah.
But just the last thing for Bad Company as well is that a Bad Company 3 has been rumored or leaked before. They have mentioned that it was something that they've at least considered. It keeps coming back up. So assumedly, at some point, it'll come back. Yeah. Rich, the next thing that you had was BioShock 4.
Yes.
Which we do know is coming.
Yeah, there's been a lot of stuff about that. Was it Jason Schreier that said, I walked into a room and saw BioShock 4?
He was covering Mafia.
Yeah, the Hangar 13 folks have all been drafted over from Mafia to do BioShock.
Because Irrational Games, it was Irrational, wasn't it, who did?
Irrational,
They're dead, aren't they? Like,
Ken Levine sort of left and formed his own studio, so he handpicked a bunch of staff from Irrational to go and start something else.
I don't know whether
Irrational
got like absorbed into something else.
Just something to do with 2K, I guess. But Levine's off doing his own thing, but apparently BioShock was being made in the same building as the Mafia game. So we know that it's coming, but yeah.
No, I think that makes the most sense. Like, I recently went back and I replayed BioShock 1 for the first time in God knows how many years. It was actually the first time I'd replayed it in full since I first played it. So I was going back to it, like, still. I mean, you know, I know everything about BioShock, but like going back to it is like, I need more of this. I've got BioShock 2 now. I can finally play BioShock 2, and I played Infinite anyway. And you know, I don't hate Infinite. There are moments when it's like, okay, this is going to be silly now. Like all the twists and stuff. It's like, okay, this is a proper, like, it reminds me of like Black Ops 3 trying to be clever.
Right.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile.
Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I think, but at like, some point, like, Ken Levine was just like, well, I'm known as the guy that can do, like, he always said he wanted to have the brains and the brawn, and I think Infinite, it's like both elements kind of clashing with each other.
Yeah, but a sequel to Bioshock, be it like, if it's something with maybe like Elizabeth, or even if it's something written Rapture, or even better, just something completely new. Mm-hmm. Maybe the, like, I've always wanted to see a Bioshock, but it is like a sci-fi thing, so it is more like the spiritual predecessor System Shock, and they did their own sci-fi, like, almost like a Prey style thing.
Like a city in space or a city or something. That'd be
because you know, the System Shock remaster is coming, the System Shock 3 is coming, so that, again, that nostalgia kick is there. And if Bioshock can tap into the people who are, like, you know, wanting this third party remake of a classic sci-fi game, they can go, okay, well, here's the first party AAA equivalent to System Shock.
I'm so curious what they do, because the end of Infinite was literally Infinite. They established that, like, the rules of the world, there's always a person, there's always a lighthouse, there's always these different elements that go into each of the stories. But then obviously, like, the DLC went back to Rapture again. Rapture is like the thing everyone associates with.
I mean,
with
the last rumor was that there was going to be something to do with Rapture kind of rising up, wasn't there? I swear there was the last rumor we had was something about Rapture kind of
trying there's a whole story about them. Yeah, someone trying to, like, take back the land else. Which, like, I don't know if you lose the isolation that makes
it's quite interesting.
So
I think that the idea of Rapture kind of rising from the, like, almost like a reverse Atlantis would be quite interesting.
That'd be cool. Some of the initial documents that they had when they were conceptualizing Bioshock was way more to do with, like, botanics and like plant powers and, like, sort of, like, you know, things to do, like, with that, which I think would make, like, a cool sort of, I don't know, companion piece to all the underwater
something
stuff.
Something makes me think I want something like a hidden city / tribe in, like, a jungle or something, like something completely different from Bioshock. It becomes more like natural, like there is just something going on in a big forest. There's lots of like, maybe there is like a laboratory that has experiments, and then suddenly that everything,
that's quite close to, like, what they had initially.
Like all the animals are starting to go all rabid and weird and stuff, like, and, you know, the beauty of Bioshock is they can really take it in any direction they want to. The idea of maybe continuing Infinite probably wouldn't work, but do something outlandishly different, take us to a different planet.
I'm super curious what they do in terms of, because Levine's obviously gone. He was obviously he was one of the lead scriptwriters, and he's the lead sort of conceptual designer and everything. So it's like trying to do another Metal Gear without Kojima is like Bioshock without Levine. Like, how do you sort of keep going with that? And obviously, like, as a studio, assumedly they're all fans of the trilogy. They, you know where they would take it. So I'm curious what sort of what they lean on and how they make it feel like Bioshock.
Alternatively, they just reboot it. which I think could happen.
Oh, they just called it Bioshock again.
Yeah, just called it Bioshock.
Maybe. Speaking of reboots, I have Mass Effect down because I don't count Mass Effect Andromeda, although I didn't think it was that bad, but it's still not really
it's
a
not
thing.
Mass Effect.
Yes, yeah, it's like, it's weird. I had some nice ideas in terms of, you know, taking the idea that at the end of Mass Effect 3, a whole bunch of people did believe Commander Shepard, and they did think that the Reapers were going to come, and then they shoot off to a different part of the galaxy because they, you know, try and sort of make a life for themselves. That's the perfect way to segue into a new Mass Effect, and you can take sort of, you know, the lessons learned from Shepard and what he did, and whatever, and the different race relations and everything, and then just strive out to do your own thing. Andromeda should have been that, and it completely dropped the ball. And like, the only sci-fi thing in Andromeda is some floating rocks. You never see anything else apart from some cat people, and it's a bit lame. And so I think that with enough time given, the Mass Effect IP is just so strong. Like, every year when N7 Day rolls around, everyone starts talking about it again. And even at BioWare, like Casey Hudson was just saying that, like, you know, like every day we come to work thinking about how we could do another Mass Effect, and it's like, yeah, that was one of your biggest successes, and it deserves more than dying.
Andromeda shouldn't be the last song that the Mass Effect choir kind of, you know, practices. It's a shame, because I think of Mass Effect as like, I've never really been able to fully invest in it, because even though I'm a big Star Trek fan, I find that Mass Effect is this weird kind of half step between Trek and Star Wars.
Like, why I love it.
I can never decide which one it wants to invest in more heavily, which is a bit of a shame. But I definitely see the potential there, and like, it's a staple of the medium. You know, Mass Effect has to continue. There's no way it shouldn't continue. But like, I don't know how you would do that. Whether you do maybe go back to the past, maybe do a prequel could potentially be
there's
a way of doing it.
Plenty stuff from the novels they can pull from, like the First Contact War. There's all the different. Yeah, there's all the stuff with all the race relations first, all the races first discovering each other. The idea that when humans were first discovered, that's the whole First Contact War. They ended up shooting at the Turians. The Turians shot at them. Like, you know, you have all those things that get to the heart of the philosophies in Mass Effect, which is the stuff that's this more Star Trekian type stuff. But that's what I want. I'd want the nerdiest possible version of that game. And even though a whole bunch of BioWare staff have left, you still do have Casey Hudson, at least he was there at the start. And they can sort of make some roads to make amends for the way that the series has kind of gone off the boil since like 2012.
But I mean, EA are putting, you know, they know that single player story stuff can work. I mean, we'll have to see how Jedi Fallen Order does, but like,
I am curious.
That just
kind
of proves that EA are like, they're not so stubborn that they're just like, this isn't even worth doing anymore, because they've actually listened and realized this could work. If Fallen Order works, we could see the return of something like Mass Effect or another, you know, heavy single player focused title. Even like Medal of Honor, like, supposedly
they're putting that back
on
Oculus,
and like that coming back with a very narrative heavy thing. It's like, this is something that does work. So I feel like the future of Mass Effect, be it 4/5, whichever you want to call it, be it -1,
it'll probably have a colon or just
Mass,
be called
Mass Effect Zero. I think all of that hinges on the success of Fallen Order, and I don't. That may be down to. I think there'd be more down to financial success, obviously, but also I think critical success will also be a thing, because I think another thing maybe people are concerned about with Fallen Order on a weird tangent is like how well the story works.
I mean, EA's influence on it.
Do you want me to tangent into my last one now?
Feel free.
Yeah, because I was going to say something about Star Wars and how I feel as though, even though we were promised great things from EA when they first got the like, and it's a shame for me because I have a little bit of bias here, because LucasArts, probably bang to rights, my favorite video game studio ever. They crafted so much joy, and like Star Wars as well. I'm kind of, I have a lot of attachment to the Jedi Knight series as well, and obviously Fallen Order is a spiritual successor to that. They wouldn't have put Star Wars Jedi and then have the colon without it having any sort of
and then
callback.
They made them backwards compatible.
And I'm really, really excited for Fallen Order. I think there are definitely some concerns, but at the end of the day, I definitely think it's the right direction. It's what we wanted to see from Star Wars for a while. And at that end, you know, I think we've seen a similar kind of resurgence of Battlefront 2 over the last few years, where EA, or DICE rather, have really listened to what Star Wars fans want to see in the video game. And this is the thing as well, most Star Wars fans who love the video games are the diehard expanded universe guys who really, really, really love the history, the canon, and have a lot of nostalgia for those older games, which is why they've brought back the Republic Commandos for Star Wars Battlefront 2. And I would love to see in the future, if EA aren't going to, well, I think they are at this point, I think it's kind of dead set that they're going to continue the franchise. I would love to see maybe experiments with something like a Republic Commando 2, because that would get people excited.
Yeah, like a tactical
Star
Wars
shooter. And the thing is, you could absolutely do it in a way where, you know, there's a big whole cliffhanger at the end of Republic Commando where one of your squad mates basically gets left behind. It's called Sev, and you don't really know what happens to him. Yeah. I think a great way to expand on that would literally to be have the sequel to Republic Commando be Imperial Commando, and you're still the same squad leader leading the your Imperial Commandos, mm-hmm. as it were, and you find out that Sev's alive and Sev's actually working for the Rebellion or something because he didn't get the order for 66 to happen. Kind of like that in a way, but like I think that would be a really clever way of doing it. And there are so many different aspects of those old Star Wars games that I'd love to see. I'd love to see a new TIE Fighter or X-Wing or Rogue Squadron thing coming through, maybe even a pod racer. Mm. And that's the thing that's frustrating me most about EA is that their direction with Star Wars has been so limited.
They've had two games, and they've
both been first-person shooters. And obviously I'm talking about the ass because Republic Commando is a first-person shooter as well. Mm-hmm. But you think of the idea of like Star Wars lends itself to so many different genres. You could have a Star Wars racing game. You could have a Star Wars RPG. You could have a Star
Wars...
Which
we used to get.
Yeah, you could have a Star Wars whatever. And I would love to see EA kind of just wake up and realize they have this amazing franchise. Don't just squander it on Battlefront.
Yeah, don't put all your eggs in one basket. You don't have to bet on these massive overblown FPSs. You could diversify the portfolio.
Have a nice little fun pod racing game. Yeah. Have a nice, great, Starfighter only experience based on Poe Dameron after Rise of Skywalker or before or whatever.
Have a StarCraft style war management.
And there are so many different eras that fans are absolutely dying to see as well. It's the thing that's frustrating to me is that you've had, it's been 4 years since Force Awakens came out and four years since that first Battlefront. They've had years to make something. I know LucasArts...
Well, the deal was inked in 2015.
Yeah, I know LucasArts didn't really do much towards the end of their cycle, but they did have 1313 coming out, and there is, the idea that maybe we should be looking at different... play more to the hardcore audience, look at maybe doing another Knights of the Old Republic, look at doing all these other different things as well. So I think there's really no excuse for how limited their approach has been.
I think
the next generation needs to be more diverse.
Yeah, man, compared to the last decade, like you said, you look at the 2000 Star Wars games, you used to get one every year, every couple of years, and it was always really diverse. That was the thing that was always at the forefront of it, was a whole bunch of different genres. So if there's one thing that needs to return next gen, it's the diversity within Star Wars in terms of the genres and everything. I would hope to see that. Rich, your last thing is Simpsons games.
Yes,
which is also a thing we used to get tons of.
A very different tangent, because the last Simpsons game I think we had was The Simpsons game.
It wasn't
Tapped Out.
No.
And I really enjoyed The Simpsons game, 12 years ago.
A little while.
But the thing about The Simpsons is, in terms of its actual television show, it's very much, it's dead, to put it bluntly.
Right, yeah.
Still makes the money, still gets the viewers, they will keep churning out series.
Golden Age is a long time
ago.
I don't know who keeps watching it. Who? Tell me.
Just whoever's got Fox on Sundays. But the golden era of The Simpsons is something that will never die. I am still watching content. People are making content right now about the golden era of The Simpsons, going back and doing retrospectives and reviews and looking at things conceptually and character studies and stuff like that. There's so much. It's weird to think there's almost Simpsons lore.
Yeah.
For 8 years of the series that was the golden era. There's so much you can play off from that, and that was when they did games like Road Rage and Hit and Run that are so beloved to so many people. And it's you can tap back into that. If you're going to do another Simpsons game, just literally when you get past season 10, just forget it. Don't bother, because you want to get people in to play this game. You need to do the stuff that people actually know. If you're referencing season 31 episode 2, no one's going to know what that is.
No.
So go back to it. And even one of the producers of Hit and Run has said very recently, it could happen. It's the right time. It could be the thing. And I think I said this on a podcast before about THQ Nordic, who are just remastering every weird game that people liked. Mm-hmm. Get them on it.
Mm-hmm. If you can remaster SpongeBob Bikini Bottom, what the hell
Battle
it's called,
Bikini Bottom, you can do Hit and Run.
Exactly. Yeah. Just put that on the Switch.
Yeah, I would love that. Hit and Run, one of my favorite games ever. I absolutely adore that series. It was when I wasn't allowed GTA, I wasn't allowed Simpsons Hit and Run. And the humor in that game, the thing that always speaks out to me about that game, apart from the fact that, it plays very well, is that its understanding of the golden era. It has a lot of references, but that's what people want to go back to. They didn't just replicate old storylines. They had a brand new Treehouse of Horror basically story that you went through, and it blended that old kind of meta self-referential humor with something that was actually genuinely new at the same time. And I'd love to see that. I'd also love to see, if we're ever going to talk about Matt Groening, why don't we get a Futurama game in the future as well, because there was that one that came out at the start of the noise.
It was called Futurama. Yeah. Video game.
they could totally do whatever they wanted with that. You could go deliveries on the Planet Express. Mm-hmm. You could do whatever. I think there's definitely scope to come back to Hit and Run. And I think there's scope to do other stuff with The Simpsons and Futurama and maybe even Disenchantment if more people pay attention to it, because that's actually quite good.
I think that like it's weird with Fox, because they used to have their whole like Fox Gaming Studio wing, and they've sort of moved away from it a bit to be more focused on like movies. That seems to be where they're putting a lot of their money in terms of like X-Men and whatever else. But like, yeah, like they used to have a pretty diverse portfolio, like in terms of, I used diverse portfolio twice in one podcast. But in terms of like The Simpsons games, the Futurama games, like you used to see that logo a lot more associated with video games. I would love to have more Hit and Run.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, other than doing another Simpsons game, which admittedly was full of self-referential stuff, and even the Simpsons game still referenced more of the golden era than the newer episodes.
That was like an
episodes.
Original story, but then it was also
because it referenced things like the Land of Chocolate and the, the museum and all that sort of thing. And as much as then you have a dance battle with God, but like, you know, but also like the way that EA actually did it, they did it completely right, is they took the same approach that Fox had with the show, which was do whatever, we're not going to censor you, which hence why like the guy with the EA sash and bags of cash was there through the whole game, and they were just slagging him off constantly. give the writers that option, get the voice actors back and do it properly, like, you know. But mechanically, another Simpsons game could be fun, but it would make the most sense to do a Hit and Run.
Depressingly, I think it's, even though I think every single Simpsons fan would love another Hit and Run, I think EA just makes so much money out of Tapped Out. They have no compulsion to do another game, which is so upsetting.
Yeah. EA is like in such a weird spot, because like in the 2000s, they used to pretty much do like games as movie sequels or like the next iteration, like the Simpsons game.
Oh, Scarface.
The Bond game, Scarface. Like, Scarface was Rebellion.
Oh, was it? Okay.
But still, that was
Godfather.
Godfather, that was like a whole mentality that was shared back then. And obviously EA's changed to be so money grubby at the minute that for them to do it. But then the change of the generation does sort of bring in new mentality. So hopefully they'd kind of remember what made people like them.
It would be great. Even just, like I said, even just a remaster. As much as I said, I wouldn't want one on Chatty. If one turned up, I'm not going to say no.
My last game is Brutal Legend, which is something that Double Fine put together. And should have been the best game of all time. You'd literally take old school heavy metal artwork from the 80s and you make a fantasy hack and slash RPG type thing around it with all the licensed tracks with like literally Lemmy and Ozzy and dude from Judas Priest whose name is Rob Halford, every single person that mattered back in the 80s. You just do a whole big old exploration celebration of it. Should have been phenomenal. And then it was a blooming stupid top down weird strategy
thing.
It's
always
meant
to me, because I remember when before that game came out, all I saw was the third person hack and slash.
That's what they advertised it with.
And then literally it dovetails that top down stuff, and it's the most bizarre thing ever.
And if it was proper top down, if it was XCOM style, if it was a proper strategy game, I would have loved it. But it was this weird thing where it was hack and slash with the camera following you around, but then you were trying to like order units and like, hold this button, tap this, make them go here, I'm going to go around the left or whatever. And it just felt so stupid. And like, obviously on the publishing side, they knew what they didn't have. So they were just advertising it as a God of War with the heavy metal thing. And that's like got so many people in. But then that bit in the game when it switches, everyone like Jules and me and everyone else just went, what the hell is this? So if they ever did another one, and I know that Tim Schafer talked about doing like another one, he's like, oh, it's one of my most beloved things and whatever, Jack Black would clearly come back to be Eddie Riggs again, and they could just do the Brutal Legend sequel that we all deserve.
I think that there's definitely a possibility for it, because obviously now that Xbox have acquired Double Fine, they're going to want, like, the fact that Psychonauts 2 got off the ground and people are excited for that, like, there is proof that, again, even with, like, the THQ stuff, there are more niche series that people will always come back to. So if Xbox turned around and said, hey, Brutal Legend 2, Scott now has to buy an Xbox Scarlet because he wants to play Brutal Legend 2.
Plus, like, there's a whole bunch of new age theatrical bands, Avenged Sevenfold, Ghost, like, Ghost in Brutal Legend.
That was so weird.
Cardinal Copio, Papa Emeritus just walking around taking missions from
It sounds almost like a Kingdom Hearts of Heavy
Metal. Exactly, Kingdom Hearts of Heavy Metal.
Just to crap all over this. Just give me a pop punk version.
Yeah. That would still be great.
Maybe they could turn the almost like a Legend series or a Brutal series. They could do something like that, as long as they don't oversaturate it like Guitar Hero did.
What would you call the pop punk version of something?
It would have to be like, it would have to incorporate Tony Hawk skater elements.
Board Shorts Legend.
Yes.
Could you not just call it like Brutal Punk?
Anything that gets you sort of you get to hang out with the dudes in Bullen for Soup or the chap from Sum 41 or whatever. But yeah. So there's a variety, a smattering of different sequels and franchises that we'd love to see on the next generation of consoles. But let us know your favorites down in the comments below, or come find us on social media if you're listening on the audio platforms. For now, though, as I take a breath, this is the What Culture Gaming podcast. And I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ewan Patterson.
We love you, Scott, and goodbye to all.
Thank you. And Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.